everyone. I'm Oscar Guinea, economist at ESIP, and this is ESIP Global Economy Podcast. Welcome! Today we are going to speak with Maria Sokolova. Maria is a Geneva-based trade expert where she works as a consultant for the United Nations on international trade. Maria previously worked at several United Nations agencies and the International Monetary Fund. She did her PhD in International Economics and Law at the Graduate Institute in Geneva. She has published articles on the impact of currencies, trade agreements and regional integration on trade, and she is also an active member of Trade Experience, a group of female trade policy experts. Today, we are going to talk about value chains, reshoring and the implications for the global economy. Maria, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much, Oscar, and thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure being part of this podcast.
Thanks to you. Maria, before we start talking about reshoring and value chains, let's take a moment to reflect about how did we get where we are? What has happened in 2020 for the overall consensus on globalization to move from being overly positive to rather negative?
2020 is indeed a year that no one of us has actually ever seen before. And if you remember, about a year ago, there was no COVID-19. The headlines were all about the first woman to get the Nobel Prize in economics. We had the all-female spacewalk. We were negotiating Brexit and Trump was denying climate change. Well, okay, the last two things have actually stayed the same. Then in China, we've learned that in China there is some disease which caused Chinese authorities to plead for help for providing medical equipment for medical stuff and the general assistance in understanding what was happening. At that point, I have to say it was easy to call the disease a flu and declare it a Chinese problem. Everything has changed when, in the beginning of 2020, the human-to-human transmission was confirmed and the disease spread all across the globe. And originally criticized reaction of China to the disease and the restrictions that it was actually imposing started being replicated by all the other countries. If I actually can talk from my personal experience, living in Geneva, a city which is almost surrounded by France, I really remember this crippling feeling of alienation and not understanding what's happening when suddenly the borders around Geneva, the borders to France, became no longer something fictional. They were actually somehow real. And that was just the beginning of the 2020. Then when governments were trying to react to the pandemic that was actually evolving, they were trying to look behind each other's shoulder. They were checking what other governments were doing, which resulted, unfortunately, in more and more export restrictions. So in April, according to the International Trade Center, we had 74 countries implementing 110 so-called temporary export measures that were restricting the exports of protective equipment. Then they were also restricting the exports of food, and further on, it crippled into other products. The reality is that when we are talking about the imposed restrictions, we're talking about the government policies, while the production is actually on the side of the private sector, and the private sector was actually still running. While government was implementing export restrictions, it also started liberalizing imports. So the private sector was faced in the was sort of pushed into the reality when you're not allowed to export, but you are supposed to import more. And that was that in my opinion, an almost classical prisoner's dilemma scenario. The scenario when all of the countries were cooperating and producing enough was the most beneficial to everyone, when there was trade flowing across the borders. But because of, in a way, well, in a way, really egoistic motivation of every country, the borders were there, and the country was not trading with other countries, therefore limiting itself to the situation when there was not enough of certain of the products of, like, medical equipment, most often, or sanitizers. And over the course of 2020, globalization learned to learn from its own mistakes. So right now, you don't hear as much about the shortages of medical masks or medical protective equipment in Europe. You actually have the value chains running well enough to deliver the products where they are needed. And that is a very, very short summary of what has happened with globalization in 2020, a year like no year before.
That's very right, Maria. I mean, 2020 is a year to remember, a year that we will all remember. Closing borders, export restrictions, import liberalization, no cooperation. And at the end, yeah, the private sector has actually delivered, and hopefully we will not have shortage of medical goods in the second wave of the pandemic. But yet, I mean, leaders in the EU and the US are openly calling for the retreat of globalization. For many of them, goods that are defined as vital or strategic need to be produced within their countries. And many of these leaders have called for the relocation or reshoring of production. But before we start discussing this, explain us, what is reshoring?
And that is actually a very good question. And the answer is actually in the word itself. When you're talking about reshoring, you actually, you're talking about something which was offshored before. So for some reasons, the production was moved out of the region, out of the country, or even out of the continent. And now when you're trying to reshore it, you're trying to bring it back to where it was before. So when I'm asked about, is reshoring a good idea, I usually just like try to point out, why did we think that offshoring was a good idea? And if you ask any trade economist, well, actually not even trade economist, but like just an international economist, you would get a very, you get a very clear answer. It was the offshoring happens because of the costs, because of the cheaper costs of production of something somewhere, because of the availability of resources to actually produce it, because of the production being very labor intensive, because of the technology which is actually available somewhere else, or even access to certain markets, which still means that you get higher higher markup, you get more profits, your production is actually doing better off somewhere. So historically, we can say that the key factor was the cost reduction. And we have to acknowledge the emergence of the GVCs that happened also due to similar reasons. And when you are talking about reshoring, you're actually planning to reshore something which was offshored because it was cheaper to produce it somewhere. So when you reshore something, you increase the costs of production of that product, meaning that your final consumers will have to pay higher price for this product unless your government is actually willing to subsidize the purchase of this product. But then still the disposable income of the population is actually lower for other products. So be it as it may, reshoring is not exactly the idea which is traditional to international economics or to which you can find easy explanation in rational understanding of international economics. It's rather a political move. It's rather some decision which is done outside of the economic scope.
But not all the goods are the same, right? I mean, we knew that many of our electronic products were produced in multiple locations and assembled in another, in value chains, but we didn't know that there was a complex value chain of to produce medical goods. So my next question is, can you tell us a bit more about the value chains of medical goods and how does it work?
So when we're talking about the value chains, right now everyone knows that value chains is not something that is evenly covering the world. There are certain hubs and some regions are more integrated in some products, others are more integrated in other products. We can definitely select EU and Asia and North America as like being the hubs for many products in value chain sense. And being connected globally is actually a big benefit for a country. As you were writing yourself, EU is a mega hub for international value chains, and globalization came to the rescue of EU during 2020. What we do have to acknowledge that most of other hubs of international value chains are much smaller and more specialized in certain products, especially when we're talking about Africa or Latin America. So covering the world unequally, different value chains deliver different products. Looking at the International Trade Center data, we actually can see that 80% of all products which were classified as crucial for countering COVID-19 pandemic were produced in just G20 countries. So we're talking about 80% of global production being concentrated in just the G20 countries. When this actually tells you about the impact that pandemic had on those medical chains, on the value chains of the medical goods. Global value chains of medical goods could deliver the fastest to the developed countries. The developed countries were the ones that could actually benefit from being connected the most. The other fact is that developing countries were potentially shut out from critical products when the temporary trade restrictions were hitting the global economy. And going back to your other question, reshoring can be, if at all it can be, actually beneficial to only the developed countries, while actually shutting out more developing countries from being a part of international trade and international the global value chain network. Turning to the temporary export measures, we actually can see that most of them were implemented by developed countries, and developing countries were on the other side of those temporary measures, while actually it was the developing countries that were liberalizing their imports more during the pandemic. Additionally, what should be noted is that the temporary trade measures were hitting 45% of those crucial products to fight the pandemic that I've mentioned before. This shows again that the lesson from the pandemic should be rather to have a more liberalized trade rather than more protectionist, especially when you're talking about the medical goods. And we can see it in the projects that have developed in 2020, for example, the APEC toolkit for the resilience of the medical global value chains actually tells you that that trade can actually help fighting the pandemic. In a nutshell, the effect of the temporary measures on global supply chains of medical products were for the benefit of the developed countries while shutting out developing. So we were not actually disadvantaged in facing the pandemic as opposed to other countries. I actually really appreciate the learning experience of that, because the resulting idea is that to face new crises, we actually need more liberalization. We need better flow of goods across different countries, because we don't know where and what's going to happen.
Thanks. And thanks, Maria, for referring to our paper. You're winning over the interviewer with that. So let me follow up with the next question. If or when there was to be another crisis like COVID-19, so developed or developing countries want to avoid being too dependent on a single producer, right? Because if something bad happened to that producer or to that geographical area as a consequence of a pandemic or a natural disaster, you want to have alternative suppliers to provide you with the goods that you need. Therefore, you want to diversify and buy from multiple sources. So my question to you is, how that will work and has it been tried before?
So I like the formulation of the question because you said if or when. And in my belief, it's rather a when and not if. Because we will have another crisis. We still have the climate change around. We could have any other form of another pandemic hitting at any point of time. And from what I believe is actually the lesson from this pandemic, we need to start cooperating more to face it. Looking into the experience of the global trade in having external shocks, one should definitely recall the 2011 Japanese earthquake. In 2011, Japan, that is a major hub for supply chains, was hit by the earthquake, and it had eliminated at least half of the percent of the GDP in just one day. And while current pandemic is not at all what we can actually compare to a one-day earthquake, there were studies done which showed that diversification of sources of supply for Japanese supply chains could have decreased this impact by more than half, meaning that the earthquake would have been half less devastating for the Chinese economy. Taking that as a learning ground sort of for what we could have done better in the current pandemic is actually indeed the diversification of the value chains. One shouldn't mix up diversification with nationalization, which quite as often is confounded when we're talking about the reshoring practices. Because diversification is not at all only about reshoring. There are other ways of improving diversification of your supply chain. One of those ways is actually, as Japanese did, is creating the registries of possible alternative suppliers and having updated information about the availability of products at one or another supplier. The other one is actually improving the movement of goods across the borders. Right now, and I guess all of us can actually admit to that, our borders are still pretty paper intensive and procedure intensive. So to actually diversify our supply chains while previewing the possibility of having another crisis, which I think is not a possibility, but rather a question of when, we should really improve the resilience of our supply chains to be able to have the support that we will need. As I was saying, reshoring is not in my point of view, reshoring is not the best idea. And we should rather try to look into working through having better, more flowy borders and having more information about other alternative sources of supply. With the technologies like blockchain, with the trade facilitation agreement of the WTO, we actually do have the roadmap on how we can actually work on it. And as I actually really like the saying, never waste a crisis. So using this experience that we're going through now, we can make our borders more paperless, more less procedural intensive, And we can actually improve the transparency of the global trade by creating more information about where you can actually find the goods that that you could potentially need.
So let's think a bit more about the topic of reshoring. If there was to be reshoring of production, let's say China, from China to elsewhere, my question to you, Maria, is who are the winners and who are the losers? And is there a space for developing countries to produce some of the products that are currently produced in China?
So on the global scale, I think that unfortunately, with the current sentiment for reshoring, everyone is a loser. It's either a loser in terms of variety or in terms of the prices. When you reshore, it means that you have offshored something before, meaning that you actually increase the price of the good when you reshore it back. When you do not reshore, you keep the production offshore at lower prices, and you have to trust that the supply chain will continue. And this is the caveat of this logic. To continue your supply, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to keep the global value chain as it is. It also means that you can actually improve the diversification of your suppliers. As I was saying in the Japanese case, the technical advances and the higher transparency of trade can actually be come to the rescue in this case. Indeed, one can speculate that China would be the biggest loser from reshoring, but in fact, it may not actually be so. And when you're looking at the latest digits, you actually do see that China has not been a loser. Yes, it like went back a little bit on the speed of its recovery, but it's almost right now at the pre-COVID levels. Due to the sheer size of the economy and the quick elimination of the temporary measures that China has actually imposed, and the high prevalence of technological advances in trade, including the e-commerce, China is actually potentially gaining on the current situation because it has actually learned from this crisis and became more efficient in how it is actually organizing its value chains. So, actually, the biggest losers are the final consumers. So the winners would be the companies that can actually adjust to the changes that are happening now, or the changes that will actually come with the next crisis, be it pandemic or anything else. And most importantly, the countries that will enable their companies to do so. As I'm saying, this could be a higher inclusion, higher diversification of the supply chains. It could be actually helping make trade more paperless. In this regard, the digital gap, of course, will pose a threat for developing countries, but it also can be a successful case of a digital leap. When we are talking about developing countries, we are definitely facing the reality of still having more paper than technology, but then that is also the opportunity. Do not underestimate the power of habit. We in Europe, we really love paper. We really love paperwork because we've been doing this for years. In other parts of the world where paperwork is not as present or doesn't have the history of being there for such a long time, there is a faster opportunity to actually use technology to the better use and to do this technological trade leap and arrive to the more transparent and more efficient value chain. So, more precisely, developing countries do have an opportunity at learning from this pandemic and being the relative. Okay, we're in a global pandemic. There is no winners per se, but developing countries can learn from this experience and actually adjust their trade policy. If they significantly liberalize their trade and work on trade facilitation measures through more efficient border services. They will recover faster and they can emerge much stronger than we've ever seen them before.
Okay, so 4 points I take from your answer. First of all, that consumers will lose out. Second, China may not be that negatively impacted because of the size of the economy and how it's actually doing afterwards during this pandemic. Then companies who are able to adjust, they might do relatively better. And in terms of developing countries being able to, you know, attract investment that for production that was done in Asia or China in particular, back to other developing countries, those are the countries who can actually liberalize their trade and can make trade more easy in terms of trade facilitation and can help those companies to adjust. Those will be the countries who can actually position themselves to get some of those investment of reshoring, right?
Yes, Oscar, exactly. That will be a summary of what I said. I guess this indeed the four main points. And what I still do want to stress out that while we're talking about the governments doing all those policies, it has to be the private sector that has to be enabled in actually meeting those trade policy decisions which are being done during the pandemic.
Very good. So that kind of takes us to the final question of the podcast. And I think this is a kind of the essence of the question of reshoring. Is reshoring a good idea? Can it be done? And will it be done?
Well, it's definitely an idea. And it's definitely an idea that will be picked up in some countries and by some industries. And it will be done. But as I have said, the cost of this will be put on final consumers. In a way, you can see reshoring in the same basket of actions as Brexit. It is a politically motivated idea, rather economically motivated idea. And this idea is parachuted into the economics and into the private sector to be somehow justified, to be somehow implemented. There are other ways, as I was saying, about making the global value chains work, making them work better and be more resilient, and make them deliver, make them fit to deliver at any time, wherever, whatever is actually needed. So, in the time of the we are in the time of the coronavirus, but next time the next global shock will happen, and we don't know what it's actually going to be. What if you lock yourself out from the production of that one thing that is needed in the next global crisis event? What if your reshoring practices actually secured you everything but that one product which is needed? What's going to happen? So I would say that relocation is definitely an idea. It will happen. We will see actually relocation happening. I still don't think it's a good idea.
Well, so let's finish on that note. Many thanks, Maria, for this very nice chat. And thanks for being a guest at ESIPE Global Economy Podcast.
Thank you so much, Oscar. Thank you so much for inviting me here to join your podcast. And everyone, please do check out Trade Experts, the network of amazing female trade experts from all over the world in all trade-related areas. And if you're a woman working on studying trade, check out our website, www.tradeexperts.org, and send us an email. We would be really happy to receive it. If you're actually looking for a trade expert, also shoot us an email. We definitely have an expert for you. Also, I would encourage young female trade experts to send us their blogs or ideas for blogs to be published on our website. We will be very happy to help you, assist you, and bring more light to female trade experts.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Maria.